A well-paired wine can turn a good meal into a memorable experience. But sometimes, you know, when you got a server standing at your table, your eyes might glaze over a little bit trying to choose, sometimes and often, from a long, complicated wine list. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Choosing the right wine can seem tricky, and even if we have some favorites, sometimes we might want to try something new. Jessica Bell is here to help you out and me out. She owns My Wine School, based in both Milwaukee and Chicago. She comes by every so often to talk with us about what are the great wines, and really her goal is to make wine accessible and fun for all of us.
You bet.
Yeah, Jessica, thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
And you also... You almost said us, and you
I know, right.
There's another
half person in here. I'm 7 months pregnant, so a little less, quote-unquote, working these days from the bottle, but still definitely very much involved in the wine world.
Well, I'm really great to have you here. Wine lists can be a little intimidating, and especially if a server's standing there. Sometimes that's intimidating as well. What are the broad categories that wine is divided into on a wine list?
Well, yeah, you've got what you've got is a lot of different restaurants doing different things with their wine list, especially these days. People want to make their mark with their wine list. Mm-hmm. So you'll have some that are very simple, what I call responsible. If you've got a small staff and you're not training them a lot on wine, then it should be a small list because you want that server who's standing in front of you to know about the wines.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you do have, say, a list with hundreds of wines, they should have a person who's dedicated to that wine list. I mean, they can be a server too, but they need to have someone who's on the floor to advise, because I just find that irresponsible to hand off a wine list with hundreds of wines and not have someone who can give you feedback. So I think that's one of the biggest pieces of advice is use the server. Don't be shy about asking for help. They mm-hmm. have a responsibility to know their wine list, whether it's 10 wines or 200 wines. Especially if it's 10 wines, someone might, even if they're not really into wine, they'll have favorites and they'll mm-hmm. be able to tell you which ones people really like. Whereas if you're at a more, with a more sophisticated wine list, hopefully they're doing some wine training or there's someone on the floor there. But what you're looking at is a lot of times you can break it down into color. That could be as simple as that: white, red, rosé, sparkling. That's what we call types of wines, or regions. But I usually find in the United States, because the consumer tends to identify their wine by the grape, that's the most common breakdown. But you also, there's one other major category I'd say is type, wine type, which is interesting. Some people might say light and fruity, full-bodied and fruity, or full-bodied and earthy. So mm-hmm. you're starting to see some of those. I don't know. I would love to hear what the callers think. If they like that one? I mean, I tend to prefer a regional one, mm-hmm. just because that's how I've learned about wine. But grapes, I think, is the most common and the most helpful for most U.S. consumers.
Yeah. I should give the numbers so people can call in with their advice. Mm-hmm. Join in at 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question, or maybe some comments about wines that you like, or maybe just a question about what to serve. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly, we'd love to hear from you, so give us a call. Within those categories, as you look at a list, does the order that of the list make any difference at all? Is there?
Well, sometimes what they'll have, they can order them in different ways. They might do them by vintage or even price sometimes, which I think is helpful because we don't live in a vacuum where we all have all the money in the world. So price is a very big determinant. In fact, I tell people, okay, first of all, when you're looking at a wine list, first of all, just relax. You know, I mean, this mm-hmm. is supposed to be fun. You're at a restaurant. You're with people you probably enjoy being with. And look at it as a learning experience, as an experience rather than pressure and something stressful. And then I'd say the next thing you start to think about is price point.
Yep.
Price point and or color of wine. And that's going to really help you start to break down this. It could be a mammoth wine list and you've already taken out anywhere from half to three quarters of the wine on the list. So don't be shy about knowing what you want to, how much you want to spend. For anything else in the world, you go in and you know pretty much more or less where you want to spend. And no one's going to think you're a cheapo or you're a show off or whatever. You just need to stay true to what your budget is. And then once you're at that point, you've already narrowed it down pretty well. Then you can start thinking of different ways to go. One is looking for value wines. A value wine, I say, is something that you get more than what you pay for. And okay. that can happen at $15 or $50. You know, okay. if you're expecting a certain level of quality at $15 and it exceeds your expectations, that's a value. So I mean, a couple of value regions I find for both red and white, just keep in mind for the listeners, is Washington State. I find some really good values there. Chile is a fantastic country to find some values, as well as Spain. Spain has some really great values as well. So those are some good places. I mean, that's not to say you can't find values in California or in Italy or in France, but those are places that just do value really well. And then another way to go is thinking about the food you're having. So, and it doesn't have to be super technical on your food and wine pairing. If you guys are thinking of getting, or if you're at a steakhouse, well, the food's going to be a little heavier. You're going to want bigger wines. And so bigger wines, you know, might be red wines, but you can still get a white wine. Chardonnay can be known as a quote-unquote bigger or fuller-bodied wine, or Cabernet. Or if you're at a seafood restaurant, you're probably going to veer towards more of a lighter types of wine. So Sauvignon Blanc for whites or Pinot Noir for reds. So if you have just a couple of those buzzwords and key grape varietals in your brain when you sit down, you have a little bit more confidence of navigating that wine list.
Yeah.
And then I think once you've started to really narrow it down, now you've got all these different things you can look for, is ask them. Ask the person.
Sure.
Now you've got, say, maybe three or four wines you're deciding between. And especially when you're with a group, I think it can be stressful about the price point, and you don't want to announce to the table how much the wine costs. So if you can pick out, say, two or three wines that are within your budget, you can show them on the list to the server, and you never have to mention numbers then.
Yeah.
They can, hopefully, if they're a good server, they say, okay, this guy is showing me three wines that are between $30 and $50. I'm not going to recommend one that's $100. That would be irresponsible. So if you are able to show them three to five that you're looking at, hey, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
What that also does is it puts the pressure on the server. So if it's not a good wine or no one thinks it's a good wine, it's like, well, I didn't pick it. You know, so you're kind of, you did the legwork, but you're not on the hook for people like it or don't like it.
I have friends who were out with some people who have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
They're very well to do, and the person ordered $1,000 bottle.
Wow.
Of wine. And
everyone got a glass.
Everybody got a glass, and she said it was awful.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is for me, the more expensive wines on the list, you're more likely to be disappointed because your expectations are so high for a $1,000 bottle of wine. You're like, if I'm paying, or if someone, even if someone else is paying this amount of money, it better blow me away. Whereas when you're spending, you know, $30 to $50 at a restaurant, which is a pretty average range, on a bottle, your expectations have been lowered. So if it's a decent wine, you're happy with your selection. But if it's a fantastic wine like you had with your friends, then, you know, everyone's happy. Everything's great. So I think if anyone is going to go in that direction and spend, say, more than $100, you really want to either make sure you know that suggestion is coming from a well-advised person, or you've done a little bit of your homework, which you can do these days. You can go online and pull up wine lists from different restaurants. A lot of times they have those online. So if you know you're going, you're a little stressed out about the idea of picking out a wine, try and go on to the restaurant's website ahead of time, pull down their wine list, and narrow it down for yourself.
Oh, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, and you can spend, you know, a little bit more time and not have to feel like you're distracted from the table's conversation, because it's hard for you to be looking at a wine list, everyone's talking, and you're trying to talk and look at a wine list at the same time.
I want to take some calls. We've got Dick and Colin both on board here. We'll get to you in just a second. You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And certainly we would love to hear from you. And as a matter of fact, let's go to Dick in Door County. Dick, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Well, good afternoon. My question had to do with wine grapes, and I was working with some staff in a restaurant, and there was a group of people asking about a particular Cabernet, and they said, is it a 100% Cabernet? And the staff didn't really know. It's my understanding that if you're labeled a Cabernet or any particular type of wine, it can be a certain amount of other grapes unless it's specifically stated. Can you tell me what the ruling is on that?
Yeah. National for the U.S., if it has Cabernet on the front of the label, it has to be at least 75%. That's for the whole U.S. Then each state has differences, but more stringent, more, you know. So, for instance, I think Oregon or Washington is more like 85 or 95%. I haven't double checked those numbers, but the minimum is 75%. And so if you have a, like I said, if you have Cabernet, you know, at least it's a 75% Cabernet. And the reason also why the blends are actually more common than we think. We see the grape on the label because the wine producers know that consumers identify their wines in the U.S. by the grape varietal. But 100% Cabernet often lacks what we call balance. Cabernet is often blended with a grape called Merlot, and it's because the two grapes really balance each other out.
Well together.
Exactly. A Cabernet tends to be more of a higher tannin, which is kind of a little what we call rougher, a little bit more structured, you know, and whereas a Merlot tends to be a little bit softer. So if you put a little Merlot in, the Cabernet and the Merlot really work well together. And it's like a recipe. When you add more ingredients, you start to get more balance in the flavors. So the national rule is 75%. If you see a grape varietal, it's at least 75%.
Mm-hmm. And are there certain wineries that produce 100% Cabernet, and is it identified then on the bottle or something?
Yeah, they do, and some of them are great. I mean, those bottles of 100% Cabernet usually are meant for aging. Cabernet is one of the grapes that is known for aging because it has high acids and high tannins naturally. And so a winemaker intends to age a little longer, they might do, say, 100% Cabernet. Mm. Because with time, it's going to soften. Sometimes they'll put it on the label, sometimes not.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks, Dick.
Thank you for calling. Colin in Madison, your turn. Hi, Colin.
Hi. I read something on the internet a long time ago, so I have no idea if it's true or not, that it said that they had white wine and they put some food coloring in it to make it look red and then gave it to a bunch of people who presumably knew something about wine, and they ranked it as like a really nice red wine, and they used all the adjectives used to describe red wine, and so they were completely fooled by it. So I was wondering how much of a difference there really is if you can be fooled that easily just by color and showing the biases that you go into wine tasting with.
Oh, definitely. You know, I mean, I always say that appearance of wine is something that a lot of people skip over, but it definitely affects your perception of the wine, without a doubt. In fact, I've done wine tastings where we do them in opaque black glasses. And it really is a great tool to see how much you do rely on your sense of sight to judge wine. You know, it depends on a lot of things. I don't know if you know, but you can make white wine from red grapes. So it's quite possible that they were making white, you know, Pinot Noir, for instance, you can make a white wine mm-hmm. from it.
Yeah.
Because almost all of the grapes that we use to make wine have all the color in the skins. And so if you remove those skins right away, you end up with a white pulp, whether it's a red or a white grape. So so for instance, if you try a white wine made from Pinot Noir, you might pick up some red red wine notes. But yeah, it's definitely true that you can fool people. When you're dealing with senses, there isn't an exact science. But, hopefully the people who knows who the people were tasting what their background was in terms of sensory training. You know, they might write a lot about wine, but do they do a lot of sensory training? So it's definitely, I don't doubt the story was true. And I definitely could be fooled if you gave me a wine. I wouldn't say that I'd be 100% all the time either, which is just kind of the cool thing about wine. I think it's such a personal experience, and it's a great lesson for consumers. Don't let someone else tell you what to like, because you just need to judge for yourself whether you think a wine is pleasing to you or not pleasing to you.
Thanks very much for calling, Colin. Appreciate your call. Jessica Bell, our guest today, owner of My Wine School. It's based in both Chicago and Milwaukee. Great to have her along. You can join in with your questions about wine at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page, post there at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking wines today with Jessica Bell, owner of My Wine School, based in Chicago and Milwaukee. How are things going, by the way? How's business?
Good, good. Well, I've slowed down a little with the baby on board, but no, things are really going great. We're working on putting some new classes on for the fall, late fall. The baby's coming in October, so I've got one class in December, and I'll be doing a lot of the classes at my sister's butcher shop in Milwaukee's Third Ward. It's called Bavette. And then just working on the 2014 schedule and writing a lot more, so working on some food and wine articles as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. And people can go to your site.
Yep. mywineschool.com. And we've got a lot of tools that you can just use at home. I've got a lot of videos for wine education that are completely free. I created this small series of do-it-yourself wine parties at home. So concepts that you can use and with all the instructions, the wines to get. It's all out there free. It's just I'm always looking for new ways to educate people about wine in fun ways.
It's a wonderful site. Again, it's My Wine School. And you can also just go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We've got a link there. You just click right on it and away you go. And your education, I mean, you have like the PhD.
Wow,
in wine.
I know. No, I've studied a lot. Definitely have studied a lot have drank a lot. not in the last 9 months, but and I think there's for me, I see wine education as, you tailor it to your own way. And that's why I call it My Wine School, because I want everyone to call it their own wine school. This is My Wine School, And I that's why I like to offer different avenues for learning. You can learn Friday night, really chill tasting, or online, or I do accreditation courses, which I'll be rolling out again in 2014.
So. Oh, wonderful. And you brought some wine today.
I did for you. Of course.
Yes,
I could. Yeah.
Here, I'm going to listen to this now. Right?
Sorry to make you all thirsty out there.
So tell us about this wine.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite, pardon me, this is one of my favorite Malbecs for the value. And that's why I was talking about earlier, values are what I'm always looking for. And it's called Decero. D-E-C-E-R-O, and it's from Argentina, which is known for their Malbecs. And it's just a great value wine. It's usually around just under $20 or at $20, but it's just so well made, really well balanced.
Oh, it's a beautiful wine.
Yeah, I find some Malbecs can be a little too jammy because it's such a hot area, but they really balance the fruit on this wine with some good, what I call acid, or just some refreshing notes. And I brought this one because I think it's always fun to suggest new types of wines to people.
Yeah.
So I was always thinking, okay, if you like, say, Cabernet, and you haven't tried a Malbec, go try a Malbec because I think you might like it.
Yeah.
They both have good, what we call structure, which is from the tannins, and they also have a lot of black fruit on them. So this would be a lot like, say, a California Cabernet. So if you like California Cabernet, check out an Argentinian Malbec.
Oh, it's really good.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it.
Oh, very, very, very good.
You get to keep it because I can't take it home.
Well, I'm sure it's going to find a very good home right here.
You bet.
Wisconsin Public Radio. We have some Facebook questions. There was a question, something came up about ordering or wine on tap.
Uh-huh.
And it's a new trend or kind of interesting trend in wine service, wine on tap. Why is it being done now? Is it popular?
Well, you know what's interesting is that a lot of states have laws against them. So that's the first obstacle that people have encountered. And then just I think people are wary of implementing a system like a tap system, which is an upfront cost, not knowing how the consumer is going to respond to it.
Yeah.
Now, about 36 states can have wine on tap, and Wisconsin's included in that. But Florida just approved it, which some people think is going to tip the scales for the rest of the states. But I think it's more for the fear that consumers are going to be judgmental about it. But, just quickly, I think it's good for everyone. It's good for the consumer. When you're ordering wines by the glass, I don't know how many times I get a day-old wine.
Yeah.
And why am I paying full price for a wine that was opened a day before?
Yeah.
Whereas with wines on tap, they are fresh as they come out. They're kept fresh. And
fewer stabilizers.
Yep. Yeah. Everything, and I've tried a bunch of them. And traditionally, any wines on tap were really, really cheap. So you were only dealing with cheap wine. But now it's becoming more of a popular trend that you can find some higher priced, which means usually higher quality wines that are available on tap. And it's also good for the business because usually wines by the glass, an establishment will charge you the cost of the bottle to them.
Yeah.
And that is because if they open it for you for one glass, they want to make sure they don't lose money on it. But now with wines on tap, they can charge a lower amount because they don't have to worry about the bottle loss.
Yeah.
So just it's a cost efficient way for that can be passed on to the consumer or kept in the hands of the restaurant. And then finally, the environment. I mean, that's a big push. We're all talking about being green these days, and a keg can be reused for some say up to 20 years. And if you think of how many bottles are in a keg, kegs vary in size, but you're looking at tons of savings in terms of landfill because you can't really, I mean, you can recycle glass, but you can't reuse that exact same bottle like you can a keg.
Yeah. So that all those things to consider. What about, someone wondered from Facebook if there's actually sparkling wines that are served on tap.
That's a great question. I haven't seen them, but I bet you they are. I'll bet you they are. I'm gonna find out for whoever. That was a great question. I haven't tried them personally on tap, but I'm just thinking about the systems that are out there, and I can't because they do use not carbon dioxide, but they do use I've heard it's like a similar tap to what they use for Guinness. So there is I'm gonna check that out. I'll post it on my Facebook. The answer, how about that? So go to my Facebook page and I'll post it and I'll copy you guys on it.
Oh, perfect. Well, we had a Facebook comment from Kyle who followed your recommendations of last summer to use Tempranillo?
Tempranillo, yeah.
Tempranillo?
Right.
In sangria, and it worked great.
Oh, good. Oh, next time I want an invitation over.
All right, now what is Tempranillo?
Tempranillo is a grape from Spain, which is one of my favorite places. I take a group over to Spain every other year or so. And it's a great wine. I mean, it's known primarily for making Rioja wines and Ribera del Duero in Spain. And it depends on where it's grown. It has different expressions. But you can find some really great Riojas for inexpensive ones for $10. They're called Joven or Young ones. And I would recommend those for your Tempranillo. Or, I'm sorry, for your sangria. Mm-hmm. And they've got a lot of fruit. They're not super acidic or have a lot of tannin. So it's just a nice, juicy wine to go into sangria.
Mm-hmm. Sue and Mequon would like to know what foods go with champagne.
Yeah,
kind of a reverse pairing question.
Right.
Here.
Well, Sue's my kind of girl because I love champagne, and sometimes it's nice to pick the wine out first, and then go with the food later. Champagne, I often say, is one of the most versatile wines to pair. The reason is that it's a lighter wine because it's white and sparkling, and yet those bubbles give it fullness too. Mm-hmm. So you can, anything from an aperitif to a cheese course. Champagne is great with cheese courses, to smoked foods. If we're talking about French champagne, a classic pairing is smoked trout, smoked cheeses with champagne.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm making you hungry, huh? Mm. And then you can go from the first courses to meat courses, depending on the type of champagne, but you can really take it through all the way through a course. And that's why I like them so much, because especially the French champagnes, they can be a little bit more expensive, but if you can take it from, they work fabulously with salads because the acid on champagne is really high and the acid in your salad is really high. So they work great with that. Oysters, so first courses are great. And then pastas and chickens and poultry and pork would work nicely. If you start to get to the osso bucos and the big steaks, you might lose that champagne in the food. But you can bring it back again for the cheese course at the end. So you can't go wrong, Sue, I think.
Larry in Oshkosh, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is there any fairly detailed empirical study out there of how restaurants typically price their wines, that is the markup? What I'm wondering is, again, it's hard to generalize, I'm sure, but do they apply kind of a flat percentage and say we're just going to mark everything up 45%, or do they kind of use a much larger percentage on the low end of their price line and a smaller percentage on the upper end there, looking for a certain dollar amount rather than that? And I'll take listen on the phone here so I don't interrupt your broadcast. And
All right.
Thanks, Larry. Yeah, I think there are certain standards that the restaurants use, and they usually use a basic profit margin, or they can do a percentage markup. I would say yes, at the lower range, they're not going to mark it up quite as much to get that percentage. They're usually not looking for a dollar amount. I say usually because every place is different. So, for instance, what I'm seeing a lot of also these days where people have retail and dining in, they'll have a corkage fee. So they sell it at retail, which is, if you want just for the easiest way to do it is, mark it up maybe 20 to 30%, let's say. Okay. That's an easy kind of equation to use. But then some of these places that have both retail and dine in will just say, okay, a $10 corkage or a $15 corkage fee. So then, Larry, in that case, yeah, they are getting a specific dollar amount for each bottle of wine rather than based on the percentage. But usually most restaurants are going to market up a certain amount. And I think it's important to note that it's hard. I think when we see the price of a wine in a retail shop and then we see it on a restaurant list, we just are angry, I think, sometimes. Yeah. Why are we getting charged so much? But you have to understand it's not just the bottle that you're buying in a restaurant. You're buying this beautiful ambiance that you're in, or just the ambiance, whatever it is, whether it's beautiful or not. You're purchasing the staff that's helping you. You're purchasing the whole experience here. Yeah. They've got to pay rent. I mean, and this is where they make most of their money, to create an experience for you. So I think there's a responsible markup often, but we do have to keep in mind that the markup often is justified to keep the business in business.
Yeah.
But some people will mark up, like if you go to Las Vegas, oh, forget about it. Those wine lists are ridiculously marked up, that's not responsible, although some would claim they have high rents and blah, blah, blah. But then you can go to some places that are local that have really great markups that are almost at retail prices.
Yeah. We had a Facebook question from Douglas, who wonders if you're seeing many computerized the tablet wine lists in restaurants. Douglas is not a fan, personally.
Yeah, I know Douglas, and thanks for the question. I think you're not seeing a whole lot of them. I think you're seeing more by all means, and I think it has to do with what people are used to. They're not used to holding a tablet, and so they kind of, you know, I still write things down, right? I still, when I'm doing work, and I still kind of want a printout of my work sometimes. And I think maybe as time goes on, we're going to see more and more of them as the consumer is more comfortable with just using tablets. I would say that what I am seeing a lot, we talked about this earlier, are apps.
Yeah.
So apps, Larry and I were talking about an app that I thought was really great for remembering wines you like. It's called Vivino, V-I-V-I-N-O. And what it does is you take a picture of the label and it fills in all the information about the wine. So rather than spending all this time trying to put the information in, it does it for you. You kind of have to check sometimes if the vintage is right, but it's pretty quick, and then you can just rate it real quickly. So that's a great way to remember your wines. I use it too, because I mean, everyone forgets the wines. You know, you're a lot of times you're not focused on everything about the wine as you shouldn't. You're out to dinner or you're with friends, but you want to remember it. So when you go to the store or another restaurant, you can look for it at the least. So
we'll put that app up on our Facebook page so people know where to go. Karis in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What's on your mind?
I'm fairly new to wines, and I'm also a vegetarian, and I always hear this wine goes great with red meat or white meat or seafood, but I was wondering if there are any wines that go particularly well with vegetarian meals.
Oh, you bet. In fact, my husband's a vegetarian, so we are eating lots of tofu and beans at my house all the time. I'm a pretty good vegetarian cook now. But no, definitely, and we still drink wine. I think that's, you know, people often ask me, what do I like? And I actually tend to prefer whiter, lighter reds, Pinot Noirs and more of whites. And it's because that's how I eat, I eat lighter foods because I'm doing a lot of vegetarian meals. So I would say, things when you're thinking about food and wine pairings, as I alluded to before, one thing you want to think of is the body of the wine. You want to match to the body of the food. So if you have a heavy food, you want a heavier wine, and vice versa. Another thing to think about, these are all matching. You can do sweetness. So if you have a lot of sweetness in your food, you're going to want more sweetness or fruit in your wine. And then if you've got acid is that sensation you get when you take a bite of a lime or a lemon. If you've got a lot of acid, like in vinegar in a salad dressing in your food, you're going to want to match that to acid in your wine. So those three things, if you focus on those three things in your food and try and match them in your wine, you're really going to steer clear of a total disaster in terms of wine pairings. And then as you get better, you can get even more nuanced with your food and wine pairings.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Karis. Appreciate your call. And Mary in Madison. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Web address was mywineschool.com. School?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I had a question about organic wine.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything under $15 without the tax, a brand name for dry red wine?
Okay. Wow. Let's see. I'm trying to think. The thing is with suggesting specific brands is that the wine world is so diversified that if I give you a name, depending on who's in your area and who's selling what, it's hard to make that work. But I will say that there are good organic wines under $15. Now, let me also just clarify something. Organic wine and wine made from organic grapes are just a little different. And I think what you really want to look for is wine from organic grapes. And the major difference is that organic wine can't add any sulfur dioxide. And you think, oh, that sounds good. I don't want that. Well, actually, just a little bit is okay. It's a preservative, a very mild preservative that just helps stabilize a wine. Your wine made from organic grapes is going to, by law, have to have a very low amount of sulfur dioxide anyways. When you have organic wine and there's no sulfur dioxide, they're difficult to have them done really well. They're out there, but they're difficult. So just keep that in mind. You want probably wine from organic grapes. And places, Chile does them really nicely because you're going to want to look for places that have really dry climates because it's really a lot easier to make organic grapes if you've got dry climates.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good place to look is Chile.
All right. Thank you for calling. And Carla in Kenosha, hi.
Hello. I just wanted to say a couple of my favorites are white Merlot and Moscato. And I was told by somebody that Moscato was actually Chateau LaSalle that's been bottled because the younger people are turned off by the older generation wine, so Moscato has been relabeled from Chateau LaSalle. So I don't know if that's true or not, but I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks, Carla. Actually, Carla, it's interesting. Moscato is one of the biggest growing categories for young people right now.
Oh.
They're loving it. And so there's been a huge resurgence of Moscato in the market right now. And it's because the younger generation, they're looking towards more of a sweeter whites and reds. So you're going to see white blends and red blends that have a little bit of a sweetness in it because it's really appealing to the, what are they, the, what's that generation called? I don't know, the one younger than me.
Jared actually had sent a Facebook question wondering if you had suggestions for Moscato.
Sure. So specific ones?
Yeah.
Or, okay. Well, like I said, there's a lot of ones that have just come out. You can definitely, California's where you're finding a resurgence of Moscato. But if you go where I like to get it, is from the place where it's a really old grape. I'll just say that. It's all over the place because it's so old. It's had time to make it to every country in the world, basically. But if I'm going to do Moscato, I love it from Italy. There's Moscato d'Asti. And I have some favorites over there that are just fabulous. And they're just a little lighter, lower in alcohol. The sweetness is almost always going to be there on the Moscato, but they're very much refreshing as well.
And Tab wondered on Facebook if you would explain what you do when you have people ordering a wide range of food at dinner. How do you pick a wine in that situation, or do you just pick more than one wine?
Yeah, I'd say usually go with the wine that's going to not interfere with any of them. So, like, let's say you have steak and someone's getting whitefish. So those are the, you know, polar opposites in terms of fullness of not only flavor but also body, and you're going to want to go with what goes with the fish. With the fish, you might say, okay, we usually don't do red with a fish, but let's, because we've got someone having a steak, let's get a Pinot Noir. It's lower in tannin. Mm-hmm. Tannin doesn't go well with the white fish. So tannin doesn't go well with the white fish, but Pinot is lower in tannin, so it will go well with the white fish. And the Pinot will go nicely probably with the steak as well. I think it's difficult when you have a lot of range of food at dinner, but what you want to do is find something that's like low in tannin, low in sugar, low in the things that aren't going to conflict with any of the pieces of the plates, what's on the plate.
Well, this has been very enjoyable.
Oh, thank you. I've had a great time.
Oh, Jessica, it's so much fun. You'll be with us again.
You bet, definitely.
Maybe after.
Right, yeah, right. And then I can enjoy the wine with you.
Oh, man. Well, go to her site. It's mywineschool.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mywineschool.com. You can learn a whole lot more about her business, but also she's got so many great things relating to wines and selecting wines that just free for the taking on her site. Jessica Bell and My Wine School, it's based in Chicago and Milwaukee. She does a wonderful job, and lovely to have her with us.
We had some great questions today.
Yeah, great questions. Thank you. And thanks for the wine.
You bet. Thank you, Larry.
Well, I tell you what, we have more to come. And one of the things, one of the times you might have a little wine is if you're celebrating retirement. When I say retirement, what do you think about? Do you imagine relaxing with friends and family, maybe traveling, or diving into a hobby? I hope the idea of retirement for you is pleasant, but if you don't think you'll ever be able to save enough, it can cause a lot of stress to even consider it. And for people who are both raising children and caring for aging parents, I think it can feel impossible to put the money away for retirement. Well, Frank Armstrong, certified financial planner, our guest next, and he'll have some great advice for those of you in that situation and those of you like me in not that situation. Coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.